Welcome to the Turley Frequency with Kevin Turley, a show for you and by you. The phone lines are open, so call now at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881. And share with us your thoughts and prayer intentions as we navigate this complicated world together. And now, your host of the Turley Frequency, Kevin Turley.
Hello and welcome to the Turley Frequency. Today on the show, we hear about Max Studios, a venture designed so that those involved become reverse missionaries, journeying to find Christ in others and sharing their stories. Its goal is to bring you fresh monthly content and conversations all through a Catholic lens. Max Studios producer Darnell Miller joins us in the next segment. Top of the hour, we pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and you are invited to join us. Feel free to text us your prayer requests on 251-928-2111. The lines are open right now. Story time today. We continue to hear the story of Blessed Father Michael McGivney and the founding of the Knights of Columbus. That's coming up in the final segment. Okay, I don't know what's happened to our start today. We seem to be starting in the dark almost. I don't know if you saw this new poll, Wall Street Journal poll that came out. It was released just on March 27th, and it has some very interesting things to say about the United States. It was a poll of, It was a poll conducted by the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago and funded by the Wall Street Journal. And this is a very interesting poll because it asked the same questions back in 1998. And what this poll reveals is just some of the societal changes in the last 25 years in the United States, or certainly from the respondents who took part. The survey was of 1,019 people, and it was taken from March 1st to March 13th. The margin of error in these sorts of things is plus or minus 4 percentage points, and the full results are all to be found on the Wall Street Journal. But let me start to dissect some of it, which may interest you and may interest me, some of the more pertinent points. For example, the attitude towards religion. Because the way the questions are phrased for the people who take part in this poll, they're asked what is the most important thing to them. And 39% said that religion was important to them, so just shy of 40%. You might think that that's a good figure. By contrast, in 1998, however, 62% of respondents to the same question said that religion was very important to them. So in 25 years, those Americans that have taken part in this survey, we've gone from 62% who said that religion was very important to them down to below 40%. 39% are saying it's important, which is a bit of a shift, right? In 25 years, that's quite an erosion of certainly my impression of Americans. I mean, 39% would be pretty good in the UK, I can tell you. I think we'd be lucky to get 3.9% here in the UK. But 62% in 1998 of US citizens polled said that religion was very important for them. And today it's only 39%. It's a downward spiral. At this rate of going, roughly using the math, you'd probably be down to about 19% in another 25 years if it continues down that trajectory. I always thought America was a religious country, a very devout country. You go through the streets of any American city on a Sunday and you'll see people going to church, people dressed for church, people taking part in their parish activities. And we've certainly had many people on this show who have taken part in various parishes and very actively alive with the various parish groups. But it goes on to ask other questions about other facets of the U.S. life. So let's have a look at some of those. The business of having children. In 1998, 59% thought that that was very important to them, the prospect of having children, the prospect of having a family, I guess, and being part of a family life. Well, 59% in 1998 has now collapsed to 30% in 2023. And that is quite, it's almost half of what it was 25 years ago. So only 30% of those polled thought that having children was important, which kind of fits with my impression of some of the different demographic changes that have taken place, not just in the United States, but across the Western world. People are waiting longer to get married. People are deciding to have less children for all sorts of reasons. This is now being replicated in a way in the terms of how people are thinking of it. But I think it also feeds into something else, which certainly millennials in particular, I think, seem to be prone to, which is a kind of doomster version of the future. That's a version of the future where we won't have enough to eat. There won't be enough fuel for everybody. There won't be enough space for everybody. You know, this sort of stuff. The stuff we talked about just a few days ago when we talked about the population bomb. We talked how that was published in 1968 and got it totally wrong. Totally wrong. Even ardent sort of secularists are pointing to that book saying its whole thesis was totally incorrect. Well, we have a version of that today, which is pretty prevalent in the media. And it's not a version which is about population per se, though that does come to play with it. It's about the climate, principally, not exclusively, but it's about the climate, that somehow the climate is about to implode and we're about to go with it. And it's all about to end in an absolute disaster. Climate emergency is the key phrase that's put around now, especially by young people. So it's not a climate crisis. It's not a climate concern. It's a climate emergency, which gives it that idea that somehow it's something which is happening now, needs to be dealt with this minute. So that is, I think, feeding into this, whether people choose to have children or people even want to have children. If you think the planet is going to be this sort of cesspit of a burning inferno within the next 20 years, well, yeah, you might think twice about having a family, right? Why would you want to wish that on your children and your grandchildren? But other generations before us had the same, if not worse, problems. Can you imagine children born just before the Second World War, as my parents were? Their parents didn't sit there and think, well, we've got Herr Hitler in Berlin and Mussolini, and we've got Stalin in Russia. I think we better delay having children because the sort of world they're coming into, we just don't know what it's going to be like. But that's not quite where we're up to today. People seem to be choosing not to have children or not even desiring to have children, which feeds into something else then, which is about marriage. And the question was not on the 1998 survey, so we don't have anything to judge it against. But of those surveyed, only 43% said that marriage was important to them. So they're not thinking about having families. They're not thinking about lifelong unions, getting married, holy sacrament of marriage. They're not thinking of anything like that. So it's getting pretty doomy and gloomy, right? These are doomsters and gloomsters that are answering these questions, because what's coming across is a complete lack of faith in the future and a lack of their part to play in the future. It's almost as if the future is being done to them, the present's being done to people. And therefore, they don't want to get involved. They don't want to get involved. You know, I wonder how much of this is impacted by the lockdowns. The lockdowns was this collective withdrawal from society, not just physically, but emotionally and mentally. And I see it today. I see it with people I know, where something inside them, just a switch was just flicked. And somehow all that external world that had been so much part of everybody's life suddenly just disappeared. And the hard thing is to try and get it switched back on again. We talked the other day about some of the ways in which shopping and banking and all these things are now all done online almost. It's very difficult to do anything, you know, with a human being in a shop or in a bank. It's very hard to use currency these days. And it feeds into this idea that somehow the world has changed and it's kind of not for the better. There's also a sense of alienation that runs through all of this, not least in the question about patriotism. Now, in 1998, 70% of the U.S. citizens that were polled said they were very patriotic, and it was very important to them. The United States was the greatest place on earth to live, was the way the question was posed. Not anymore. Not anymore. Today, we're down to 38% of those polled that say that patriotism is very important. 38%. So again, it's kind of almost half dropped on. And what does that say? Well, patriotism has been given a bad rap in these last few years. But let's differentiate between nationalism and patriotism. Nationalism is where countries go to war with each other and this country thinks it's better than that other country, et cetera, et cetera. Nationalism has been, you know, just look at the pages of history and you'll see nationalism written right across it. Patriotism is something different, and we need to relearn what patriotism is. Patriotism is love for one's country based on the fact that you belong to it. It's closely linked to the idea of belonging to a family. Now, if you met somebody who said to you, I hate my family and everybody in it, and I've hated all the generations that have gone before me, you'd think there's something wrong with that person. I would, anyway. So patriotism is accepting something of the history that has produced us and the society we live in. And it's not necessarily linked to any sort of racial group or anything like that. Societies can be, most societies, certainly in Europe, are a composite of many, many different nationalities that have collided and clashed and ended up living together on a certain piece of soil. But that gives us a shared history. G.K. Chesterton, the English Catholic convert, fantastic writer, great thinker. I'm going to paraphrase what he said. He said, the nationalist attacks the enemy, but the patriot fights and defends, not because he hates an enemy, but because he loves what's behind him. He loves those that he is defending. That's what a patriot is. So if you're losing that sense of patriotism in the United States, then what you're losing is a sense of place. It's got nothing to do with flags. It's got nothing to do with arms or weapons or guns or battles or anything like that. It's a sense of who you are and where you belong and that you have a part to play. So it doesn't surprise me that patriotism has gone through the floor along with everything else in this survey because people are not feeling connected. They're not feeling part of the society they're living in anymore, or they're choosing not to be. They're choosing not to be. Because at the end of the day, that's all about choice, right? And, you know, faith, family, fatherland, that's what we're talking about here. And they've all seen a complete drop in any, not just love or concern or value, but even interest. And before you say this survey must be all young people, not at all. Not at all. The survey was a very equal group across the demographics, both Republican and Democrat, young and old, senior citizens. Now, there were variations on replies, obviously, as it went along. For example, it gets even worse, right, when it comes to young people and religion, for example. They responded that only 31% thought that that religion was important, compared to 55% among the seniors. So there are some differentiations, but I mean, the millennials, the young people that are coming up, they're the people who are going to shape the next society. Now, my only slight caveat to all of this is perhaps age will mature people. But also history, for anybody who studied it, we know that it doesn't stand still. And the other thing we have to guard against is considering that history moves in sort of parallel lines or in linear fashion. It doesn't. History moves in random ways. And sometimes that's for good. You know, I've lived long enough in London, which is a microcosm of the world, to know that the predictions of what London would be like today, 30 years ago, were totally wrong. In some ways, for the better. In some ways, yes, for the worse. But they were wrong. The predictions were wrong. The expectations were wrong. Because we all thought that London would go in this direction. It would become like this. It would have this look. other factors come into play, be they immigration, be they political factors, Brexit, the COVID pandemic, the emptying out of the city, the virtual escape from London. Just 3-4 years ago, it was predicted in London that the public transport system would collapse. It would not be able to cope with the volume of people who were using it. And I remember 3 or 4 years ago, things were pretty crowded, morning, noon and night. The system was designed for X amount of millions, and then it had plus that many times over. Today, total opposite. The argument is about how do we manage to keep the infrastructure going because so few people are using it. Now, that's maybe not something directly translatable to the United States, but what I'm trying to say is that history doesn't work in linear lines. So the fact today that people do not consider religion important, or very few people consider it important, doesn't mean that in 5, 10, 15 years that may change. It would only take a war or a catastrophe of one sort or another before people are driven to their knees. Take, for example, the great Soviet atheistic state. Do you know that they reintroduced religion to the masses in the Second World War in 1941? They reopened the churches and encouraged people to go in and pray. And these were the Soviet communists. For twofold reasons. One, it was good for morale, but also people wanted it. People needed it. And maybe people will start to say that my life is incomplete without marriage, without children. And maybe somebody in America will say, do you know, this country may have its problems, like any family, but it's still a great place to live. It's still a great place to bring up a family. In fact, there may be no better place on earth in terms of its security, in terms of its health, in terms of its economic potential. I can think of a lot worse places to live than the United States of America, as I'm sure you can. So this survey, it really is a snapshot, I think, of a mindset. It's a mindset of this moment in time, and it's a pretty gloomy one. But there was some sort of telling, I'll just conclude with a couple of things, which are on the increase. Well, there was one sort of funny one, I thought it was funny. Did you know that in 1998, hard work was deemed to be very important by 83% of the population? The United States industrious mindset deemed that hard work was part and parcel of life and very, very important. Do you know what it is today? 67%. So only 60% of Americans think that hard work is important anymore. But guess what is the thing that has increased in importance? There's only one value which has gone up since 1998. And that is money. Love of money. The importance of money. In 1998, 31% of the United States polled said that money was important, just 31%. Today, it's 43%. Money is important. Money is the be-all and end-all, which is a rather telling conclusion in a sense. Love of all money. I think, does that mean we have a call?
Yes, Kevin. We finally got our technology up and running from the start of the show. So we have a caller. I'll go ahead and put him through to you, if that's all right.
Sure.
Hey, how's it going, Kevin? I think this day is going to live in infamy, man, because I finally got a hold of you guys. I've been calling and calling and calling, and praise Jesus, the good Lord, the phones are working, man. Oh, man, it's so good to talk to you and hear your voice, man.
Yeah, it's good to hear yours, Dave. What's on your mind? What do you think of this survey?
Man, you know, Kevin, you know how to tug my heartstrings, man. You know how to tug my heartstrings. I was shedding tears over here just trying to hold back everything, you know, because, you know, you're talking about patriotism. It's all, really is all about the good old red, white, and blue, man. May the wings of liberty never lose a feather, Kevin. You know, We're lucky here, man. But it's sad the way this country's gone, man. I just, I don't like the direction, you know. Hard work is what built this country, man. You know, not and then you got people like Nancy Pelosi, you know, who isn't about the red, white, and blue, trying to bring us down, man. You know, out of her mind, man. Out of her mind.
Yeah, it doesn't look good, according to this survey. People have given up on hard work, given up on religion, given up on family, given up on marriage, given up on the United States. It doesn't look good.
You think, yeah, let me ask you this, Kevin. Do you think those automatic idiots are going to give up too? You know, they're going to get to a point where, like, I'm sorry, I cannot work anymore. I am tired of all this hard work. And what are we going to do then, man? Because, you know, we're relying on these automatic idiots, you know?
Well, the only thing I will say is that when it comes to artificial intelligence, at least you can program it in a way that it is consistent. So we could actually program it so that it actually loves the United States, loves children, loves having families, and thinks that money is has its place, but no more. Okay. Thank you, Dave. We're going to leave it there for the moment. When we come back, we will be meeting Darnell Miller, and he will be talking to us about a very interesting media apostolate initiative. Stay tuned to the Charlie Frequency. Charlie Frequency live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. My next guest is Darnell Miller, who is a writer, a photographer, and a videographer who, it says here, loves storytelling in all its forms. And that is because he is a producer at Max Studios at the University of St. Thomas in Houston. Now, on their website, it says the following. Their mission is reverse missionaries journeying to find Christ in others and sharing their stories with a goal to bring you fresh monthly content and conversations all through a Catholic lens. So to find out more about what's happening at Max Studios, I'm delighted to be joined by Darnell this morning. Darnell, welcome to the Turley Frequency.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So, Darnell, tell me, Max Studios, it's got a great title. What's the Max in Max Studios? You're maxing out there or what?
No, it's St. Maximilian Kolbe, actually. I know a lot of people who know his story know his time in Auschwitz and him, you know, trading his life for that of a man with a family and dying there. But not many people know that before that, he had a thriving media apostolate, right? He started newspapers, he had radio shows, he was using all the newest technology of the time. Back then, that was like radio, right? His goal was to have a movie studio, but he died before he could put that into action. So we're started on kind of that legacy of, like, how do we take what we have, the new tools of the day, and utilize those to tell stories and to bring people to Christ?
Well, that's really interesting because, I mean, obviously I do know about Maximilian Kolbe and I do know his wonderful media apostolate in Europe and in Asia and all around. Mm-hmm. But I didn't connect it with Max Studios. That's wonderful. That's a very good patron I think you've chosen there, Darnell. But tell me this. Now, let me be the devil's advocate for a moment, if you don't mind. There are many, many, many media apostolates. I don't have enough fingers on my hands to count all the new media apostolates that have been cropping up here, there, and everywhere. So I meet you on a plane flying into Houston, and you tell me what you're doing, Darnell, and I say to you, okay, give me that elevator pitch. What is so different about you than all these other media apostolates that are out there?
I think with us, it's the way we approach storytelling. I know that in the Catholic space, it's really easy to just lean on apologetics and to teach. And because we were founded at the University of St. Thomas here in Houston, we have theology professors that can do that and do that way better than we can. And so we knew that we had to complement that. And the way we can complement that is by moving away from the apologetics of the explaining of the faith to showing, showcasing people who are putting it into action. Like, what does it mean to believe what we believe? How do we live that life? And who are people who are examples of that? And those are the kinds of stories that we're trying to tell. We're trying to teach people what the faith is about, yes, but not through a text lens of like, this is the rule, this is the rule, this is the rule. But this is how people have applied it to their life. This is how God has affected them. And this is how he's continuing to draw them closer to himself.
So that's great, Darnell. You've got me. You've hooked me now. I'm in, you know. But my next question in this mythical plane journey would be, okay, that sounds great. But what does that mm-hmm. mean in practice? Because the other thing which you and I know, Darnell, is there's any amount of media out there. You can go on YouTube, you can start a podcast, you can do a movie, you can do a radio show, you can do television. You know, it's endless, the amount of media, to say nothing of stories, books, and all the rest of it. So how does Mac Studios sort of define itself in terms of its production and content?
We see ourselves as an internet-first platform. So, I mean, the movies are great, but they have people, you know, held captive for 2 hours, and then they're done with it for who knows how long, right? How many times do people watch a movie over and over again? But with social media, with YouTube, with Instagram, people are on their phones for hours, which is problematic, yes. But if we can give them something good while they're on it and they're going to spend the time there anyway, like there's potential for repeat viewership. There's potential for shareability. It's easier to share a YouTube video than it is to share an actual movie. And so we kind of lean into those platforms of like, okay, podcasts. We know people like podcasts. That's a big boom right now. Let's do podcasts. We know people are on Instagram. We know people want short form content like that. That's easy to digest. That's fun to watch and fun to share. And that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, no, it sounds absolutely fantastic. I mean, I'm with you. I'm in this plane journey. I'm thinking, yes, I'm cheering you on now. So give me an example of, say, a video channel, a YouTube channel, or something you've done on YouTube channel that you would say, this is a good example of what we're trying to do.
Yeah, so we have several different formats on our YouTube channel. So our YouTube channel is Mac Studios on YouTube. And on our channel, we have a number of series that kind of highlight different things, right? We have a student-focused series. We're at a university, so we tell student stories of student success. So that's a particular niche audience, right? How to be successful in college and what that means, because being successful in college isn't just getting good grades. It's also cultivating a good spiritual life and cultivating a good social life. And so we talk to students, we talk to alumni who have done that, and we ask them for advice, like what their experience was, how did they navigate this, and how others can do the same and find and leave the University of St. Thomas with a great experience prepared for whatever the future is. So that's one way. We also partner with different organizations, different people who are doing this better than we are. So last year we had an opportunity to work with Word on Fire and put together a series called The New Evangelization of the New Media, where we talk to people who are experts on Twitch, people who are experts on Facebook, people who are experts on Instagram, to talk about how do they navigate this, right? How did they understand how to serve the people that watch their channels? How did they figure out how to tell stories in a real way? And how do they know, like, navigate the mechanics of that particular platform? So for that, we reach out to people like Leah Darrow, who has, 40,000 people on Facebook. And then we reached out to Haley Stewart, who has, you know, a large following. She was a blogger that shifted over to Instagram. She has a large following on Instagram and uses stories and reels and everything very creatively. And then we reached out to Jonathan Blevins, who is, from what I understand, one of the few Catholic Twitch streamers, and to talk about what that platform is, because to be honest, like, I didn't really understand Twitch until I talked to him. I don't really play video games, but that is a huge demographic, right? There's a lot of people that play video games, a lot of Catholics who play video games, and he is an example of someone who's interested in that space, but is also really interested in sharing his faith. And so we talked about, like, what does that mean and what does that look like, especially in an environment that tends to be kind of toxic.
Mm. You're listening to the wise words of Darnell Miller, who is a writer, a photographer, and a videographer, and he's also a producer at Max Studios at the University of St. Thomas at Houston. I love what you're doing here, Darnell, because in some ways you're reaching out to all these very successful YouTubers and podcasters and all the rest of it. And obviously, you know, it's a rising tide that lifts all the boats, so hopefully you're getting some of that as well. But you're absolutely right. I mean, I remember going to a talk maybe 20 years ago, which is show how old I am. And it was at a school for parents at the school, and I was just going along to help out. And there was a talk about video games, and I thought, well, this will be interesting because I know nothing about video games. And when I was growing up, video games were like Space Invaders, which you probably have never heard of. But if you check out a museum somewhere, you'll see that it's a very basic sort of thing, Darnell. But anyway, but what that man said that night, he was younger than me, and he had worked with a lot of young people. And what he was saying then, this is 20 odd years ago, was that video gaming and gaming for us, my generation, was something that we were either interested in or not fussed about. It was just there. He said, for the generation that's emerging, it's a way of life. And I never forget the way he said that. And it really struck me. Would you agree with that? And is that kind of what you're getting at here, that there's a different generational shift in how people are spending their free time?
Absolutely. I think of I am 35 years old, so I'm at the cusp of like the social media generation. I was on Facebook when it still required a university email for you to be able to get onto Facebook, and I, because of that, like I it's easy for me to not spend time on social media because like I've done other stuff in my life, right? But for the younger generation, for the students here, there's no real separation between their life in like person and real life and what they're doing online. Those are extensions of who they are. And it's really easy for people who don't live that way to see, like, no, they're just wasting their time on something else. That's not a real thing. Why would they do that? But for them, like, no, that's part of their life. And so once we understand that that's the way they approach it, that's the way we see it, whether we like it or not, because that's just the fact, right? Then we can better understand how we can serve them and how we can reach them in the spaces where they actually are. I like to tell people, like, it was like back in like in the 80s when people started going to malls and like people were canvassing the town squares and like we were like, oh, I can't meet people. Where are all the people at? And they're like, well, they're at the mall. And you're just like, okay, but I want them to be here. And you're like, well, that's too bad. They're not there. If you want to find the people, you need to go where they're at. And I think there's a lot of people in our space who are operating that way, who want the people to be where they're at and not go to them. And that is kind of like tied into our mission, reverse mission, is we're going to the people, right? We want to see where they're at. We want to understand their spaces, and we want to see how God's working in their lives, because especially in the States, it's easy to think that, oh, like we're going out, we're giving Jesus to everybody, but he's present everywhere. And then when you help people realize how he's operating in their lives, it's easy for other people to see, oh, he's working in mine too.
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying, Darnell, is extremely thought-provoking. I think completely on the money, because, you know, it makes me cringe when I hear people talking about youth ministries or this type of thing, and they're talking about stuff that went out of fashion 20 years ago. Do you know what I mean? And you know, and what you're talking about is something which is very true of a lot of media ventures, not just media apostolate, which is you have to go where the audience is. Mm-hmm. In the sense that, producing wonderful six-hour films about religious life may be brilliant, but if everybody's on YouTube watching 10-minute videos, you know, you need to think about your format. You need to think about your structure, not just – and I'm sure you get a little bit of this, and maybe we can talk about it the other side of the break, but creatives are sometimes the worst people for this type of thing because they want to express themselves and their gifts all over the place, regardless of any time or money constraints. But it's actually maybe not what people want. Just to give you a little vignette, I worked on a feature film a number of years ago where the director insisted that the film be on a 35mm print, right? And I remember sitting in the production meeting, everybody thinking this is going to cost a lot of money. And this was at a time, Darnell, when digital was in, right? This isn't the 1930s we're talking. This is a time when everything was digital. No, it had to be on 35 because of the texture of the film. You know, mm-hmm. great. If you're not paying for it, that's great. Listen, Darnell, can you stay with us for another segment? Because I'm just getting into this now.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I look forward to it.
And if anybody has any questions for Darnell Miller, producer at Max Studios, University of St. Thomas, Houston, then text me 251-928-2111. Happy to pose the questions for you. Or if you want to speak to him, 888-928-0881. And perhaps you have a question for about a son, a daughter, a grandson, a nephew, a niece, and you want a little bit of help about how to engage with them through the media in a very positive way. Stay tuned to the Turning Frequency back after these words. Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. I hope your Wednesday is going well. Thank you so much for joining us. Today we're in a fascinating conversation with Darnell Miller, who is a producer over at Max Studios at the University of St. Thomas, Houston. And now we know what the Max is about, St. Maximilian Kolbe, which is fantastic. Darnell, I was just looking at your website during the break there. I love this reverse missionaries. Was that your idea?
I'm not sure how it popped up exactly. I feel like my co-producer and I, Bridget, were talking one day, and like the idea just like jumped out at us, and we're just like, yes, this is awesome. So I can't claim credit for it. I think it was the Holy Spirit kind of really focusing in on the way we approach our work.
Well, I think it's very original anyway. I've never come across reverse missionaries. It sounds sort of sci-fi-y, you know, which is good in a way. My hat's off. But I mean, your website, first of all, as you would expect for something which is dealing in media apostolate, is fantastic. It's very bright. Oh, it's very interactive. I was looking around at different things before I came on air today, and it was full of interesting stuff. But I suppose my question really is, not so much, you know, I'm 100% signed up now to what you're doing and how you're doing it. But then we come to the real difficult challenge, which is a challenge for all of us in Catholic media, Darnell, which is not just how do we reach people, but how do we impact people who we're not supposed to reach, if you know what I mean. I mean, you know, I can see by your website and by your intent, you just don't want to sing to the choir. You want everybody to hear your beautiful music. So What have you come up with in that field?
I think for us, we just kind of focus on what we think is interesting, and we take a lot of cues from websites or from shows that we like that may not be in the Catholic space, the type of storytelling that we know people are gravitating to, and we try to see what we can do in our space, because I do think that it's easy to see like Catholic content, be like, well, it's supposed to look like this because everybody else does it this way.
That's right.
But there's just so much opportunity and so many types of ways to create something, whether even like something as simple as a podcast, right? You have so many formats you can look into. We have so many things that you can do. Like it doesn't have to sound like radio. Like radio makes sense because like that's the platform. It's live. But a podcast doesn't have to be that. Like, it could be intimate storytelling. It could be narrative. It could be all sorts of things. And so we kind of, like, find other things that we're like, oh, that's really interesting. I wonder what this would look like in our space. I wonder what kind of stories of God's success can we tell in this way. And so it's a lot of kind of, like, seeing what's out there and kind of seeing, like, all right, how do we adapt this? How do we mend this to the Catholic faith?
So, Darnell, just let me – what you're saying here is that radio is a failed media apostolate. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Like, I think
I'm joking. No, but you're absolutely right. I mean, podcasts. I mean, I tell you what's going through my mind as you're speaking, Darnell, is that the real trick of the devil when it comes to Catholic media apostolate is that it's got to be a certain way, and we're talking cookie cutter, whether it's television, radio, podcasts, interactive YouTube channels. It's got to be done this way. So it's got to have that particular type of music. You know what I'm talking about.
It's got to have
that sort of voiceover intro, which is going to tell you something heartwarming and friendly. It's not going to frighten you, and it's going to be what it's like getting into a soapy bath. And then it's going to read you the catechism in various forms for another 20 minutes. And then it's going to say good night, God bless, and that's it.
Does that ring a bell? That's the format that everybody thinks we need to hold on to. What I'm saying is
that format is so tired that even the people doing it are bored with it. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I've worked in EWTN and various other things, and even the people there privately, they'll say, this is so dull. It's worthy, but it's dull.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, we have a couple of interns, and the question I pose to them about everything that they're working on, everything that they write, is, would you watch this? And if the answer is no, that means nobody else is going to want to watch either, because we're the most invested in this. And so if we can't make something that even we want to watch, like, why should we expect anybody else to want to watch it either? And the thing is, like, the faith is so much more important than that. Like, we need to create things that are amazing, because that is, like, what the faith is worthy of. And so we can't phone it in. Like, we can't just, like, be like, well, this is the way, and not try to, like, innovate or try to do something that's beautiful, because our faith calls us to that. That's what it, like, we need to show the glory of Christ. Like, how do we do that? We don't do that by making cookie cutter programming. Like, we got to go out of our way. We got to think hard and dig deep.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine Michelangelo turning to the Pope and saying, oh, they did it like this a few hundred years ago, and, you know, we better stick with that format, you know? No, he did the Sistine Chapel, and the Pope said, wow, look at this, you know, this is new, this is good.
I know.
This is something different. So I've had a couple of comments texted to me while we've been talking, Darnell. I hope we haven't ruffled any feathers, but I'll sum it up. I won't use all the words they've used, but it has to be entertaining, otherwise it bores me and I turn it off. And I think they're talking about generic Catholic media that just aims at everybody, hits nobody, and dies on the printing press floor. But you're going in a different direction. So tell me this. If I was coming to you as an intern or as a young person at the University of St. Thomas, and we were having this conversation, Darnell, and I was very excited and very wanting to do something really different, really sort of expansive and avant-garde even, where would you point me? In which direction would you say, you know, this is an area where there's a real possibility for Catholic apologetics and nobody is doing it?
Oh, man. If you were an intern, I'd ask you what your skill set is to start, right? Like, are you somebody who's, like, really interested in audio? Are you somebody that's interested in video or photography? There's a number of ways to do it. So I'd figure out what that skill set looks like, because that's going to be the biggest determining factor of all of it, right? Like, what can you actually do? And then once they've let me know, like, okay, I want to do podcasting, I'd be like, well, what do you listen to? What kind of podcast do you like? What kind of podcasts really draw you in? And then if they let me know, I'd give them a list of other things. I'm like, hey, think about this, check out this podcast. And I do that a lot with our interns. I find stuff that I think that is adjacent to what I know that they're already listening to. And I'm saying, hey, check this out. They're doing something that's really interesting. And then I'll have them come back with, you know, ideas of, like, what they want to do in terms of content and how we can kind of figure out how to create in that format. So it really depends on what their skill set is and what their goals are, because not everybody wants to go in and be, like, you know, be in front of the camera necessarily. Some people want just to do the production side of it, and some people want to do radio, and they don't want to do they want their voice to be heard, but they don't want to be seen while they're doing it. And I understand all of those things, right? So that's the way we'd approach it.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, I've just had a message here. You know, that's what we're trying to do on this show. You know, we have taken the cookie cutter Catholic radio, and we've thrown it out the window. We're doing it different. If it works, great. If it doesn't, so what? You know, I mean, in some ways, what I'm suggesting is that when it comes to creative ventures, be they radio, podcasts, whatever, dare to be different. Doesn't mean I'm not talking about being unorthodox. I'm not talking of not proclaiming the truths of our Catholic faith, but dare to do it in radical ways, which people will sit up and say, wow, I never thought of that. Never heard that before. Never saw it put in that way. Because listen, if the traditional cookie cutter. I know we're being a bit hard on somebody somewhere, but those traditional methods, if they're not doing the business anymore, if they're not actually evangelizing people, then it begs the question, a question you must have asked yourself when you set this up, Darnell, which is, well, why do it?
Mm-hmm. That's a question that I feel like I pose to myself frequently still. Like it's that concept of like, am I doing this because this is the right thing to do? Am I like, how do I get my ego out of it? Because like, am I making something because I think it's cool and interesting, or is it something that's actually worth making? Is it something that's actually going to reach people? Because those are two different things. I want to make something that I want to make, yes, but if it's not going to reach people, I need to be able to step back and be like, this is just a me thing. This is not a Christ thing. And like, I feel like I have that battle in everything I try to touch and everything that I'm trying to work on. And I think that's part of it, right? I think that we need to make sure that we're reaching people. We need to make sure, that people are watching it. We need to check our metrics, right? As unfun as that is sometimes, like when you put your heart and soul into something and then you're just like, okay, this is like my 10 out of 10, which is like the worst ranking video I put out this week. Like, what do I need to do differently? Why didn't this hit? And that, I mean, that's the hardest part for me sometimes of the, like, I wanted this to be good. I wanted people to want this, and they don't. And only I wanted this. So, like, how do I give this to God and let him direct me?
Yeah, I mean, just as you're talking, Darnell, I'm thinking just in what you're saying. It's very interesting because I think that in a lot of creative endeavors, there has to be an element of what you've termed ego. There has to be an element of drive and initiative, which often comes from one or two individuals. I mean, if you look at the history of any great artistic endeavor, there's people who drive things forward. And of course, there's a mixture of desire, apostolate, and ego. It's all mixed in there. But I think if you take that out of the equation totally, or if you expect it to disappear, what I've seen before then is, or what happens then is a kind of mediocrity, a kind of committee kind of mentality. It's sort of insipid, takes it over, and it becomes bland. And again, I wonder if that's a kind of double trick of the devil, you know, that sometimes if you are thinking, I need to do this, forget about your ego, just do it. And if people like it, great. And if people don't like it and it falls flat, so what? You did it. But I think, again, sitting around waiting for that moment when you think I'm going to be as pure as the driven snow when I'm doing this, I think as artists, that's not going to happen. I don't know what your
view is. It's never going to happen. It reminds me of – so we used to have – back when I was in college, we had an event on Fridays called Tea Time with Father Callum, who was one of the priests on campus. And I remember once we were sitting there and people were asking him about like discernment and all sorts of stuff. And he's like, you guys make it so difficult. If you want to do something and it's not a sin, just do
exactly.
it. God will let you know if it's going to work or not. And we're just like, ah. And so like, I think of that regularly. And so like, whenever I'm like on the fence about something or I'm like unsure, I'm just like, well, like I'm never going to know if I don't just do the thing. And so like, I got to get out of my head and do it. And if it fails, it fails, right? Like that is part of it. Like I don't want anything to fail, but that's just – like that's not how life works. And so sometimes things are going to fall flat, and we learn from those things. But if we don't do them, we'll never know.
Absolutely. And no, if you're waiting for that perfect moment, that perfect curve, that perfect Holy Spirit inspiration, it's never going to happen. You have to try things. And life is, I mean, I think it's maybe one of the things about getting older. You're more comfortable with failure, right? Because you've had so much of it. You know, but you're also more comfortable with the idea that you've got to try things, that you kind of spitball ideas, and then one of them might stick to the wall, and that's fine. Now, I've had a question, Darnell, and we were having a great conversation, but I need to ask you the odd question. And somebody's asking about your metrics. So how do you actually measure your audiences?
And so we have a number of ways that we measure that. So we have metrics for everything we post up. We post most of our videos on YouTube. So YouTube will just kind of let us know, like, hey, like, this is how many people are watching this thing. This is how many people subscribe because they watch this thing. This is how many people watch the next thing after this. And so we look at our YouTube metrics a lot. Our podcast, you know, we use Anchor, which is the podcast platform of Spotify. And they are awesome because they'll let you know how many people are watching, where they're from, all those types of things. And they give you like a summary at the end of the year of like, hey, this is what your podcast did and this is who it reached and this is how it's grown. And so like we monitor those things that we're kind of looking for, you know, we're looking for growth and for opportunities in there. And then the last thing we do is we have a newsletter that we send out, I think weekly. And the newsletter is awesome because it's people who like our stuff enough on social media who are like, I want to hear from you directly. And so we have we check to see what people are clicking on there in our newsletters, and we try to keep it pretty simple. So it's not like you get like 1,000 things in the newsletter every week. It's like 2 or 3 things that are kind of like the big things that are happening at the moment. And we try to keep our click through rate on that as high as possible. We've been lucky enough to keep our click through rate on our newsletter above 50% as long as we've had it, which is just historically for me, it's baffling, because I've had other newsletters for other things that I've worked on, and it's like awesome if you get like 13% click through rates.
Right.
And so the fact that we've kept this one above 50, I don't understand it. Like, people like what we're doing and it feels weird. And they're here for it and it's awesome. But like, part of me is like, when's the rug going to be pulled out from under us?
Well, hopefully not anytime soon. Now, listen, believe it or not, Darnell, we've come to the end of our interview. It's flown by, and I feel as if we've just got started. There may be people listening who are thinking of sending children to St. Thomas, or they may be interested in going and working or contacting you about all sorts of creative things. Where can they find out more about you, your work, and how to get in touch with Mac Studios?
So you can look us up on our website, which is ustmacstudios.com. Or on our social media platforms, Instagram or YouTube, or preferred at Mac Studios UST.
So just to confirm, you have got a YouTube channel, haven't you?
Yes, we do. Yeah.
And is that, what would you say, where is the, like, for somebody like me who listens to this thing, this is really interesting. Where would you point them for that first entry point into your content?
It's interesting. I'd say, if you are interested on our audio platforms, I'd say check out Protagonists of Change, which is it's a storytelling podcast that consists of a brief story of, that's tied to the major theme of an interview story with a person and then a story of a saint. And so that's podcast. If you're interested in video, I think you guys would love our most recent project that we did with Leah Darrow on her big family farm. So I'd recommend that one to start.
It all sounds like great stuff. Darnell, thank you so much for coming on the show and taking time out. Maybe we'll speak again in the near future.
Absolutely. I hope so. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, folks, that was Darnell Miller from Mac Studios over at the University of St. Thomas, Houston. When we come back, we'll be talking to the Lord. We'll be praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency.